This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Let's talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. And we were having a discussion before we came on. Brian said Mel Tucker's done. It's over for Mel Tucker at Michigan State. The guy can't recruit a lick. They got sold a bill of goods. He didn't say that.
I have nothing but respect for the cigar chomping coach of the Michigan State Spartans. Thank you.
He didn't say that. I asked a bit of a leading question. Hey, is it over before it started up there? Because recruiting, which
he's 1-0 against Michigan.
He is.
That's all that matters.
He is. He did win on the field, which is what counts more than anything else. But the talk was that recruiting was his strength. Recruiting was going to see an immediate, bump from his presence. And in year one year one at the helm, that wasn't the case. And in dramatic fashion, it wasn't the case, obviously, to Michigan's benefit. So we'll start out our conversation there with Brian Cook from MGO Blog. Brian, how are you?
Good.
Seth Fisher, also from MGO Blog. Seth, how are you?
I'm good. My Sparty relatives haven't talked to me.
And, of course, Craig Ross is back with us. So, guys, look, as closes go, this is without question one of the stronger closes for Michigan. Maybe not as it relates to the rankings, although, Rayshon had a high ranking, a top 247 guy, but position of need, defensive tackle, three of them down the stretch, two of them flipped from other schools, one of them flipped from your in-state rival. This is a strong finish for Michigan.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, that was a position of need. I don't even think position of need covers it. I think gaping chasm of doom is probably more accurate. And now you add 2 4 stars and a guy in Awuna who I think is a good bet to at least be a plugger and may have some more upside too. Like, that really just leaves one gaping chasm of doom on the roster, which is much better than two.
Yeah. I actually looked at some of Ike's highlights. How do you say his last name, Sam?
I say Awuna. I can't. Now ask me how to say his first name and I can't help you.
Yeah, I just
there you go.
But I looked at some, and it's hard to understand. On 247, they had him at number 1102, which I don't think is a high rating. But but it's hard to figure out because he is big and he is athletic. There's a play on his highlights where ball gets tipped in the air and he intercepts it, and he's got about 60 yards to run, and nobody seems to really catch him. And, so he does seem to be a reasonably athletic guy. The highlights, for what that's worth, show him getting double teamed a lot and dealing with the double teams reasonably well. I'm not sure. I think Texas offered him. I'm not sure why he's number 1102.
He is a super raw kid. This is not a guy. Physically, he would be a guy. They say he's up to 290 now. Physically, he'd be a guy that you say, okay, he can play right away. He's big enough to play right away. But where he is in his football development, he won't be a guy unless he's Quiddy Pay and he just completely, blows all expectations for how quickly he picks things up and how quickly he advances physically. Quiddy was a freak in more than one way. Quiddy was not supposed to be Quiddy Pay out the gate. Maybe they saw on the horizon him turning into that kind of guy, but he came and played right away. He came and played before Luigi Villain, who was much higher rated.
Yeah.
So unless I'm highlighting that as an exception and not the rule, not the expectation for Ike Awuna. Unless Ike is that, this is a kid that, year two or three in a program is when you start to see him make a contribution, Seth.
Yeah, man, I you never see defensive tackles who are that good as a freshman. I mean,
even
five never.
Stars.
But yeah, even the five stars. Like, Hinton came in and, you know, was okay and then got beat a couple times and made a couple mistakes. That's what you see as a five-star defensive tackle. And, like, that it just doesn't happen. There's too much to learn. There's too much going on. And in a high school level, you're just not going to see all the things that they show you, not to mention most of these guys, and this kind of goes back to Benny, these guys mostly don't even play inside. So, like, Eichelwanna at least is playing on the interior, but, like, Rashawn Benny is, like, most of these defensive tackles in college who play end in high school.
Absolutely. And, you know, here's the thing, and I know you did a breakdown of the Baltimore Ravens defense, which, you know, they will clearly be borrowing from liberally as they put together what their defensive scheme is going to be. So don't yet know what it's going to look like. What are they going to take from Linguist? What are they going to take from Baltimore? What are they going to take from Ty Grantham? Sounds like it's going to be a marriage of a lot of different things, but just, you know, as odd fronts go, as 3-4 alignments go, this is a situation where we could see a guy like Rashawn Benny play in, right, Seth?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone remembers Alan Branch, right? And that's the kind of play you're talking about. Like, and he played in the 3-4 at Michigan, too. And he was, remember, they listed him at defensive end when he was 340 pounds, and people are like, what are you doing?
Well, they didn't list him at 340, so.
Well, I mean, that's what you're doing. You know, he's a that kind of guy is you put him against single blocking, he blows up that guard, and that, you know, creates havoc in the backfield. And he's better there sometimes than in the middle, where you really just want to stand up to doubles and let everything else work.
He will go down. You just mentioned something that jogged my memory. That will go down forever when my retirement happens, and they say, who is the player that you can say you saw first? Was Alan Branch. It was Alan Branch. I saw Alan Branch playing tight end and fullback.
And yeah, in Chaparral?
And he was from New Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
He was from New Mexico, and he was at a combine. He was at a combine down at the Army Combine down in San Antonio. He was a no one, a nobody from New Mexico. He was looking at a New Mexico kid. And I remember telling Ryan English about him. Like, look, man. There's a kid from New Mexico, and I remember him saying something along the lines of GTFOH. New Mexico doesn't have any kids. It's like, hey, man, there's a kid in New Mexico named Alan Branch. He can play, or he's a good athlete. So that one will be written in my, I'm sure, when I retire. That's one that he's going to have to come and say, yeah, Sam, you told me about Alan Branch. Anyway, I digress. you're saying, Brian.
So I think one interesting thing about the 3-4 approach that Michigan is going to go through is that actually, I think Seth put up a post about Matt Campbell's defense, which often is a 3-3-5, but doesn't have the kind of like 3-3-5 personnel that the Rich Rod 3-3-5 does. Has like legit defensive tackles, at least two of them, you know, a strong side end type, and then they fill in the pieces around that, and that has created a very modern spread defending defense at Iowa State. And so, you know, I think having that kind of combination of like three legit NFL type defensive tackles or defensive linemen, and then just wrapping the rest of your defense around it to deal with whatever the frippery you're going to see on a week-to-week basis is a pretty good approach. And so, you know, I'm happy with the idea that there's going to be a multiple defense that has a lot of three-man line.
I saw Benny last year live against West Bloomfield, and 2 years ago, I guess it would have been in 2020 or 2019. And I liked him a lot as a defensive lineman. I liked him more as an offensive lineman. So the upside for a guy like Benny is if he doesn't work out on the D-line, I'm about 99% sure he can play on the O-line.
You have those.
Yeah. But
Greg is trying to cause all kind of problems.
I know.
Yeah. Why did they get this guy? Yeah, Rashawn Benny needs to play offensive line. Come on.
No, I'm not saying he needs to play offensive line. I mean, Michigan has a hole, obviously, and hopefully this is one that he can help fill. But I wonder about George Rooks, because I haven't heard a lot of noise about him. I haven't seen him play. Have you guys? I know his dad was a good player at Notre Dame, but that's a recent flip or whatever it is to Michigan.
Wasn't that at Syracuse?
I thought it was Notre Dame.
No, I think it's Syracuse.
Syracuse, okay, sorry. Yeah. I haven't watched any of him. I don't know much about him. But...
So I think the discussion is very much the same. This is a kid, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, Seth. He wanted to be recruited as a defensive end. And I think that there are a lot of schools that were telling him, yeah, you're a defensive end, but they were thinking, mm-hmm. really a defensive tackle. But this is another situation, Seth, where, yeah, okay, now in this scheme, yeah, you can be a defensive end in Michigan's defense.
Yeah. Bo in the middle of the 70s, he had a 5-2 defense, and it had a couple outside, defensive ends on the outside and two tackles and then a middle guard in the middle. And he was having the hardest time recruiting because all these guys wanted to be linebackers, not ends, and all these other guys wanted to be ends and not tackles. So he changed the name to defensive end instead of defensive tackle, and to outside linebacker instead of defensive end, and then all of a sudden he got all these recruits.
Jedi mind tricks.
Really, and we're still doing that. We're still doing that. You ever try to teach football to someone who doesn't know anything about football, and you say, well, here's the offensive tackle, and they're on the outside, and here's the defensive tackle, and he's on the inside, and that makes no sense. It's just because we changed the names.
Yeah, I think that he's a kid at this point, probably 260, 270, as it stands. You guys pointed out quite aptly that most, five-star defensive linemen aren't ready to play right away. I think for him, it's going to be how big is he when he reports. His game is actually suited to this scheme. He's not really a cat quick off the snap, get up field, rush the passer kind of guy. He's more of a guy who is going to, I don't want to make it sound like it's a nothing job, but he can occupy blockers. He can keep his linebackers clean. I think if you watch his film, you'll see him get off blocks and play the run well. I just think what he is as a defensive lineman is tailored to what they're going to be asking him to do here.
He reminds me of Chris Wormley, kind of
great point.
DEDT swing guy, not the best pass rusher in the world, has a little bit of that in his tool set, but as a run defender, you give him a tight end and it's over. Mm-hmm. He can deal with single blocks for most offensive linemen, down the road when he's developed. So, he's that kind of flexible piece who's probably not going to be, the biggest star in the world, but it's going to be a key part of your defense.
Now, Craig, you mentioned you watching Rayshon Benny as a junior. I watched Rayshon in his first game back, or maybe it's the second game back, but their first playoff game against Grosse Pointe South, and I thought he was outstanding. He had a couple of sacks in that game. He was very tough to block. Now, admittedly, they were facing a depleted Grosse Pointe South team because, Will Johnson had to be maybe 50% in that game. He was not healthy at all. I was surprised that he played. He was on a bum wheel. So
Benny wasn't covering Will Johnson.
He was not. But if Will is 100%, because they were playing him he played everywhere. He played quarterback. He played receiver. He played running back. And, he would have been, the amount of havoc that Rayshon Benny would have wreaked, would it have been the same if Will Johnson was 100% is kind of the point there. So I wanted to acknowledge that, but as it stood, he was disruptive. He had a couple of sacks in the game. You saw him be very strong in the run and against the run as the game went on. You saw him have good get off. I thought he used his hands really well. He played with good leverage. It was a vast improvement over what you probably saw, Craig, as a junior, where, even talking to his line, he would say, man, look, dude, I think he has potential as a defensive lineman. He's a better offensive lineman. And he was at that stage. But I think projection-wise, coaches were thinking, no, this guy has the tools to be a really good defensive lineman. And I think they started to really see, once he got back on the field after that meniscus injury, once he got back on the field, they started to see, okay, yeah, this is what we were talking about. We can see him getting closer to that potential as a defensive lineman.
I'm not suggesting when I saw him that I didn't like him as a defensive lineman. What I'm suggesting is I loved him as an offensive lineman, which is a different thing. That's all. So
I mean, I totally see why people were looking at him in offensive line. He's got great feet. He's got good leverage. He plays with good pad level, which, like, nobody does at this. But he also plays offense all the time. And, like, you mentioned that Grosse Pointe South game. He only played on the defense half the time. Half the time he wasn't even out there. So he made all that impact, even though, like, you know, he's not on the field half of the play. And he's not even playing defensive tackle. He's playing defensive end in most of that.
And that was
really hard to scout him.
And to be clear, that was because, you know, he was just coming back from injury, and they were they were sort of, you know, managing his snaps. So it's not like he, you know, he's this guy that they had to. I know you weren't saying that, Seth, but for folks who aren't familiar, he tore his meniscus in a car crash in the summertime, and so it was, you know, it was a task, it was a process just getting back to play during the season. And he came back for the playoffs, and it was one of the more miraculous turnarounds for a team.
They were scared about him.
I don't know if I've ever seen anything like it, right?
Oh, my God. And the minute he walks on the field, it's different, because he gets out there, they're on offense first, and he just wrecks two guys and, like, double pancakes. And then, like, Michigan State's little fumbly running back that they have just, like, starts running behind him. And you're like, okay, I see
how these guys are good. Michigan State, his name is Devion Prim. He looked good in that game. He had a good game that day, probably.
Don't get cocky, Seth. Don't get cocky.
he looked good that day. And maybe he's, I don't know, I don't know their class very well. He might be their best prospect at this point. But we do need to talk about the recruiting significance. I joked about it at the beginning. And I need to acknowledge before we get deep into it, Rashawn Bentley was leaning to Michigan for the majority of his. It was an abrupt turn of events for him to, to commit to Michigan State. Look, guys, this was like virtually a done deal for Michigan, seemingly in the early fall. And in a matter of a month's time, he was go green, go white. But when he didn't sign early, they acted like that was just. Nothing of consequence, nothing to see here, no reason for concern. They, in retrospect, why they were so naive to the fact, or purposefully naive to the fact, is beyond me, because the alarm bell should have been going off at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I can't understand if that was what they were doing. You got to know that Michigan is a threat for anybody in the state. So maybe they dropped the ball, which would be pretty bad in year one, right? Because this was kind of their keystone recruiting dub after their actual on-field dub. And, you know, to lose that and then kind of clunk in with the 10th or 11th best class in the conference, you know, in the new coach bump year where you got your rivalry victory, doesn't seem to bode that well.
You know, I kind of, tell me what you guys think of this. I think the biggest factor in Rashawn Bentley coming to Michigan was the retention of Sean Newell. However, it was certainly an assist. It was an assist for Michigan to add Ron Bellamy, an assist for Michigan State to not add Steve Klinkscale. And I really don't understand that because, you know, if you sort of compare starts, I mean, it's, if you look back in the history, you know, of Mark D'Antonio as Michigan State's coach, I don't care I'll give him credit for being a really, really good coach. He benefited from Rich Rodriguez. He benefited from Rich Rodriguez because the reception to Rich Rodriguez in the state of Michigan wasn't ideal. And he was able to take advantage of that on the recruiting trail. So he recruited the state of Michigan extremely well, basically out of the gate. If you're Mel Tucker, you can't afford to not get a single player in the top 10 in the state of Michigan. Can't afford that. And so the opportunity to strengthen himself in the state of Michigan recruiting, he didn't do that. Whereas Jim Harbaugh, on the other hand, strengthened Michigan. Michigan gets stronger on the recruiting trail. And then Michigan State, essentially, in my opinion, take another step back. Curious what you guys think of that, you know, the idea that's.
I don't think that Michigan State is the main threat. I think that maybe this year Michigan State was a main threat for Benny and Andrew Anthony because, you know, like new coach bump and new guys. But, like, Michigan State's program is far away from competing. You got to get Penn State out of here. You got to get Kentucky out of here. Like, yeah. Those are the, and you got to get Ohio State back out of here. Like, those are the guys who have been killing us.
I hear you. But, you know, he's supposed to be super recruiter, right?
Well, yeah, I'm just saying Michigan.
Yeah, super.
Hiring Ron Bellamy is not going to just pay off against Michigan State.
Right.
Hiring Ron Bellamy gives you credibility with guys who are sending players to go play for Tim Banks at Penn State. And, you know, we're talking about Benny. Like, you know, Carter is the guy at Oak Park. Carter is a legend in Detroit coaching, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that guy literally played with Alan Trammell and Lou Whitaker. Everyone in Detroit knows him. And, like, that dude, like, if he's not sending players to you, you got to ask why. And I think Bellamy is going to help with that aspect.
I don't think there's any question about it.
Well, if you go back to Michigan State, you know, you talk about in-state, it's obviously hurting them. But what's, I think, hurting them even more is the fact that, okay, they got the number 20 guy in Ohio, and then they got the number 46 guy in Ohio. And the mid-level three stars that they really built that D'Antonio program on, they're going to Wisconsin, they're going to Northwestern, they're going to Cincinnati, they're going to Penn State, Pitt, Kentucky, Iowa, anywhere except Michigan State. And we talked about how, you know, Ohio recruiting is like, I feel like it's not maybe the best place for Michigan to have a bunch of resources, but Michigan State isn't recruiting guys that Ohio State is going to offer. And so they need to have five guys from that state every year, and guys ranked higher than number 46 in the state. So that was like, as soon as Kentucky got competitive in there, and then Cincinnati being like a real threat for four-star prospects in the state of Ohio is just death for their recruiting bit. And then you kind of lump in the fact that Ohio's kind of down in recruiting, and yeah, they have a real tough time finding talent now, and they used to have a pretty good base in Michigan and Ohio.
Well, the problem Michigan State has, I mean, not to be mean, but they don't really have any sort of national cachet. It's not like Michigan State can go down to, say, anywhere and say, oh, we're Michigan State. I mean, I'm not sure that has a lot of clout. It's harder to sell them and to sell themselves. I mean, in the state of Michigan, that's not true, of course. But when you get outside of Michigan, Michigan State's going to have to really work to sell what they have. And in Michigan this year, I think Michigan and Michigan State only recruited for two kids head to head. Is that right, Sam? I think it was Andrell and Benny.
For the most part.
Yeah, I mean, I think they ended up with number 16.
They recruited Raheem Anderson.
Okay. But that wasn't much of a real recruiting war, was it? I think Raheem Anderson was more likely some other place if it wasn't Michigan.
I think they were in there legitimately.
Okay.
I don't know that they would have been the pick. To answer your question, I don't know that they would have been the pick, but they were in there strong, so they were a factor. But I got to tell you guys, if you can't recruit to Michigan State, you can't recruit. Now, that's not my quote. See here, that's not my quote. You know who said that?
Yeah, Mel Tucker.
Mel Tucker. Mel Tucker.
We really need cigars for this podcast, you guys.
You run that by me like I haven't heard that? Come on, man.
Those are Mel Tucker's words, man. If you can't recruit to Michigan State, you can't recruit. So said Mel Tucker. So what are we to make of them having like the number 48 or 49 class in the country this year?
Well, I mean, recruit is a very broad definition. Like, you know, UMass recruits, right? Like,
well, I mean, the other thing is, recall that D'Antonio made a lot of headway getting guys who were way under the radar.
Yeah.
I think, for example, Trey Waynes, I think, was a two-star from Georgia. Yeah, Le'Veon Bell was a guy Michigan passed on. He was at the Michigan camp, and they decided he can't play linebacker. Well, I guess he couldn't play linebacker, but he could do some other stuff. And so they have made it. we were talking about New England recruiting, or I was last week, and I went back and looked at the kids from New England that Michigan brought in, and here's a list. McCune, 854, John Runyon, unrated, Sandrastill, 590, Schoonover, 800, Bench Mason, 820, Andrew Stuber, 365, Black was 116, Mo Hurst, 266. So, I mean, in fact, I looked at the 10 kids until the most recent ones out of New England, and they all hit to some degree, and none of them, except for Black, who was a four-star, was really a big time deal. So you can recruit under the radar. And so I don't want to say, even though their class may be rated at 48 or 49, so is Wisconsin's half the damn time. And so it isn't clear to me that they've completely blown it out here.
So wait a minute. So you hate on Rashawn Penny playing defensive line.
I didn't hate on him.
You hate on Jared Goff being the Lions quarterback.
He stinks.
Loving up Mel Tucker this morning?
Loving up Mel Tucker. I'm just saying that it isn't obvious. I mean, recruiting ratings are, as Brian has said, 5 stars are likely to be better than 4 stars, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what's better? Actually evaluating kids. And in fact, Michigan has done a good job, a really good job of evaluating under the radar kids in the past too. I mean, you take Ronnie Bell. Who was recruiting Ronnie Bell? Or Hassan Haskins, who I think wasn't even on any radars.
Okay.
And those are two good guys in the Michigan offense.
Well, I will give you that. It's about your evaluation. Here's what we know about Michigan State. They evaluated Rashawn Penny and thought he was really, really good.
Well, we know that.
They evaluated Audric Estime and thought he was really, really good. Those were the two highest rated recruits in their class, and they lost them.
Lost both of them. Yeah. Well, I hear you. I hear you. I just want to see how things pan out.
Yeah, that's right. Don't get cocky. That's right, Craig. Let's not be cocky.
Guys, you guys are probably superstitious about Donovan Edwards getting his 5th star too, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Steve Lorenz, who I know has no power over rankings, is that no Michigan running back is ranked in the top 50, and he consistently fails me in this regard.
He's
got to step it up.
You guys don't step on cracks or any of that kind of stuff, right? All right, we got to get to a break. Back on the other side, before we go blog roundtable, we return here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The 5-star back curse.
Oh yeah, no, we have Steve on our podcast periodically, and we always berate him about the thing he has no control over.
Hey, I don't envy that at all. I mean, Alan's like the bane of my rating. You hear from kids, you hear from parents, you hear from coaches, and they all complain. No, right. Oh man, this is great.
Yeah, well, that is how it is. There's no way around it.
I mean, I don't even know how you do it. I can see how you can evaluate the top 20 or 30 kids. I mean, kids that just really sort of jump out.
Yeah.
After that, it looks flatter to me. The universe looks a lot flatter to me when you start looking at kid A versus kid B.
These like recruitment posts, just kind of gather everything said about it.
Yeah.
I think I have a pretty good track record of like picking out the guys who I think are misranked.
Okay.
And, you know, but overall they're the amount of scouting they do, the amount of stuff they put into those rankings. Mm-hmm. Like it means something. Even like 500 versus 300, I think means at least.
It means something too. Like if you drop a whole lot, guys who like start out in the top 25 at the beginning of their class as sophomores, and then they're like, you know, just on the edge of 4-star, like that's usually a bad sign. And then guys who like rise very late is a good sign. But you're still, a lot of times you're looking at a guy who's like 260 and wondering what he's going to be when he's 300 pounds. Well, you put 40 pounds in you know, a few years on an 18-year-old, and you have a very different person, right? Like you don't know what you're going to get out of that guy. And like, we're trying that. I think the sites try to check for that. So a lot of times what we're doing when we're writing those posts is looking at what the sites say all the time about these prospects that they don't know, and then trying to fill in what that's going to mean.
Look, the NFL, which probably scouts about as well as anyone, is a still pretty hit or miss proposition.
Oh, yeah.
And they have generally a couple of years of college playing at a high level. And you start talking about high school kids. I mean, here's another problem. Kyle Kalis. Kyle Kalis was like the all-time superstar offensive lineman. Problem was he was coached great and he was from a great program. Kyle Kalis, I think, had already reached his ceiling. I mean, because he came from a superstar high school program with plenty of coaching in his...
No, that Kurt Anderson, that he explained it to us. Ron explained it to us from Kurt.
They did say he was stiff.
It starts with not letting first-level defenders through on zone plays. That's what it starts with.
I hear you. I guess it was both.
I think they kind of go hand in hand. I think you let those guys go by because you're stiff and not an ankle bender.
They do. One coach told me, one of the things he looks at is if a guy can bend and get into a stand without his heels coming off the ground is one of the ways that he would measure or assess ankle flexion.
When Kurt was at Eastern, he and I were golf buddies, and he had a long conversation with me about ankle bending. It was way over my head, but it did make sense years later when you point out flaws in guys. You need to be able to bend your ankles.
I remember going to Sound Mind, Sound Body and watching how the coach, and watching, I mean, you tell just watching those guys, if you go and like moving around, like how each guy moves around. I'm blanking on the name, but there was like a guy committed to Michigan State at the time who was like, every time his foot hit the ground, it like thundered. I'm like, that guy is not probably gonna make it. And sure enough, he's like, you know, buried on Michigan State's roster as a redshirt. And then Jermaine Hall was like the other guy, and like his feet were like fast. And I know that he hasn't really panned out either, but that was because he gained the weight. But I think that like the coaches, I think if they can get out and see these players, will probably learn a lot more than any recruiters do or any of the evaluators. And I think that's where like disconnect is between coaches.
Want to shift gears a bit, get over into some basketball, maybe a little basketball recruiting as well. Michigan, as we know, still on pause, hopefully come off of pause as scheduled. Big Ten play has gone on, of course, in their absence. And we've seen some teams rise. We've seen some teams fall further. So Illinois rises, right? They go out. They take care of – they fend off Iowa. They come back and beat Indiana in overtime. And suddenly this Illinois team is like, oh, this is – okay, this is what we thought. This is what we thought we were going to see. Yes. Right. You look at Iowa. Yeah, they drop one. But then they come back and they make Michigan State the only team in the league that can make Michigan State look good offensively. But at least they won. Right. At least they won the game. First time Luka Garza has beaten Michigan State in his career. Speaking of Michigan State, according to our friend Scott Bell, Michigan State is in sole possession of 13th place in the Big Ten Conference. So
I don't think Scott Bell is the only person. No. I mean, you can look at the standings. This is not a secret.
Look, it's why, and I said this yesterday to Steve Clark, Coach of the Year. Coach of the Year credit needs to go to Tom Izzo for coming within single digits of Iowa. It was a tremendous accomplishment.
Don't get cocky.
Tremendous accomplishment for Tom Izzo to get that out of this team, don't you think?
What part of the last 15 years is like, okay, now is when we get cocky in any sport about anything? Come on.
Hey, you need to lighten up. We need to lighten up.
You need to lighten up.
You need to lighten up. You need to have some fun, man. I got to tell you, sitting there watching that game, I was sitting there frustrated. Frustrated because Iowa wasn't blowing Michigan State out.
Well, when you
and I looked at that and I said, this is just brilliant coaching by Tom Izzo.
Well, if you're Iowa, how do you prepare for Michigan State? Because they're going to throw 20 different guys on the court.
Well, what you do is you also throw – like there were literally 20 guys in that game who got 10 minutes or more. I looked at the box score and I'm like, I have never seen this before in my life. Literally 10 guys on each team.
They shot better from three than they did from two.
Well, I mean, that's what happens when you don't have anyone who can get anywhere near the bucket. So I've been looking at box scores after I watch these Michigan State games, and they're crazy. So BartTorvik.com will give you, like, rim, like how many times you got to the rim. And Michigan State, like, they're, like, getting to the rim 7-8 times a game. You know, Michigan, back when they had a basketball program, that was more like 22 to 25 to even 30. So they can't get to the bucket at all. And, you know, you look at Aaron Henry, and that makes sense, right? You look at Josh Langford, and that makes sense, right? They're shooters. They don't have the kind of quick-touch athleticism where you need to get to the bucket. You know, Rocky Watts becoming one of the worst efficiency guys in the Big Ten, that's what's killing him. Because he was the guy who needed to step in and be able to get to the basket and set up his teammates, and he just can't do anything.
Yeah, you look at their squad. That's why I say, you know, to get serious for a moment, the fixes for them, I said this about Michigan during the football season, the fixes aren't on the roster. Or at least if they are, they aren't ready to be the fixes. And that's the situation that I think Michigan State is in. I do not see them turning it around and making the tournament. I'm curious what you guys think.
Well, they, you know, Brian makes a really good point, and I hadn't thought of this. I'm looking at the
Try talking at the computer.
There's 10 guys with 10 minutes. I never saw anything like that. And so it seems like Michigan State or Izzo needs to sort of decide who on his what his team is. And he hasn't seemed to have decided that. I hadn't thought of that, Brian. That's a really good point.
He has all these weird guys and
weird guys,
crazy lineups he has to throw out.
I mean, Foster Lawyer is a weird guy.
Look, you know this kind of thing really taxes Tom Izzo when he has to throw out these weird lineups. You know,
well, he had this interview after the Iowa game where he's talking about the officials for one, and then he's also talking about the fact that he can't do his Tom Izzo stuff because of the coronavirus, because he doesn't know if he's going to break them into 1,000 pieces.
Hey, Ira, didn't we hear from Tom?
I
got to
coach and practice the way I got to practice. That's what sucks about basketball. What the hell are you going to do? Yeah, I don't give a shit. I don't care.
So it's a lot like that. That happened like 5 years ago or something. You guys are still hanging on to that drop. I respect that. But, yeah, he just seems like he's at a loss.
I love Tom Izzo. I do. I'm going to savor him as long as we can because I love those reactions. But, you know, this is – you got to give the man – I mean, we look at his great accomplishments. A lot of times you look too hard at the wins and the losses. Look at the margins. Look at the margins. Michigan State was getting blown out, and here they go against the one of the most potent offensive teams in the country, and they come within single digits. That is an accomplishment. Matt Painter – Juwan Howard, Matt Painter, Tom Izzo. Three-man race coach of the year.
This is big-time athletics.
Right, Tom. That's right.
How are you going to not put Fran in there? This is like the best Iowa team that they've ever had in the KenPom era. Fran's my coach of the year.
So it was after the Illinois game, and I think it was it Jay Billis? And he was like, you know, Iowa lost this game. You know, I'm looking at it, and I'm trying to see how they would – you know, stand up to the top teams in the country. They just gave up 50% from the field for Illinois. They have got to improve their defense. Said everyone forever, as long as Fran McCaffrey's been here. Like, what are you talking about, dude? That's never going to change. They're never
going to defend. As long as you got Luka Garza at center, and they're going to have Luka Garza at center for the next 20 years, it's never going to change.
I mean, they're fourth in KenPom. They have the best offense in the country in a year where Gonzaga is doing what they're doing. So, like, yeah, their defense sucks. But
I guess, can it, talking about their offense being elite, is that worthy of saying, hey, man, Fran McCaffrey is doing a much better job? Their offense has been really good. Is this a huge leap for them to be at this level? To me, Fran, talking about Fran McCaffrey, coach of the year, show me an improvement.
No.
Then I'll say, all right.
No. Because last year they were the fifth best offense in the country. Their adjusted offensive efficiency rating was 117. They're 8 points better than that this year. That is bonkers. So, like, yeah, their defense sucks. But you know what wins championships? Well, defense and offense. But hey, they're pretty good. And
did Loyola Marymount win a championship, Ira? Do you remember Loyola Marymount winning a championship? I don't. Do you, Seth? Did they win one?
No, they were fun trying.
I know
to
that
lose.
Iowa is shooting like just ridiculous from three, except for Joe Toussaint, unfortunately. But like Wieskamp is at 45%, Garza is at 45%, and CJ Frederick's at 50%. Like they keep on finding these guys. Like finding CJ Frederick.
Yeah, they redshirted that guy.
Yeah,
they brought him in. They redshirted him. They redshirted Nungi. I don't know how to pronounce that.
Yeah, how come they always have a guy who looks like Nungi?
That's just what they do.
Because they had a guy, Kreiner, before.
Yeah, Kreiner, yeah.
Kreiner, he looks like Ed Norton from the sewers.
And Michigan needs to do that. They need that guy on the roster because there's going to be so much turnover at center and all that. They just need the guy who's going to be around for 7 years and be super tall and shoot some threes and play some defense.
Oh, Nungi's a good offensive player.
He looks like physically. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, but not like features, like looks like.
No.
I got
Yeah, I mean, and Nungi's a nice player. I don't know where in the world he came from, but he can play offense. You know,
he came from Iowa.
Craig, we can't hear you.
KenPom has got Iowa, Brian's right, at number one in the country, and they're so far ahead, it's absurd. And yet, they're 117. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen that big of a split between offense and defense. Maybe Loyola.
2014 Michigan, the Nick Stauskas year.
I think we were still in the 70s then, weren't
yes,
we?
Yes, but that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, there, we're talking
if you like, if you like that team, and if you thought that team was worthy of some Coach of the Year consideration, consider Fran McCaffrey in Iowa.
Yeah.
And, that's not – we need to stop leaving Tom out of this conversation. Tom Izzo needs to be in the Coach of the Year conversation.
I am detecting certain amounts of cockiness from you, Sam Webb.
Hey, Sam, wait till they get Imani Bates. It'll all turn around.
I mean, good grief. Here I am trying to be nice to Tom Izzo, trying to give credit where credit is due. And even when I give credit, you say I'm taking it. I don't get it. I can't. I watched that Iowa game. I was like, man, this is amazing. How well Michigan State is playing offensively in this game. I fully expected for them to get just boat raced in that contest, and they were within single digits, and that has to be great coaching. Same team that got blown out. What is it? They lost four of their last six heading into the pause, and that brings about a comparison that I want to talk about seriously as we close things out here. A lot of Michigan fans, guys, were worried and are worried about how Michigan is going to look coming out of this pause. And they say, well, look at Michigan State. Look how bad Michigan State has been coming out of their pause. And my reply to them is, look at how bad Michigan State was heading into the pause.
Yeah.
Isn't that, don't we have to make some sort of relative assessments here? I mean, Michigan looked really, really good heading into their pause. So I think there's reason to be optimistic that they won't suffer the same fate that Michigan State has suffered coming out of theirs.
State had one game when they were significantly worse than normal. They had that Rutgers game, which scared us all. Because I was like, oh my God, if Michigan doesn't play for 2 weeks, doesn't get to practice weeks, and then like has to go play a game, maybe they are going to look like. The other games they played, you know, Ohio State game, that was just regular Michigan State. And then the Iowa game is like, it was a blowout. Iowa wasn't making their baskets. So like, I mean, okay, so Michigan might have a clunker when they come back. I think that's...
Yeah, and Villanova went on a pretty long pause, and they're 3-1 since they came back against, you know, a couple of top 50 teams. They played Seton Hall twice, beat them twice. So I think, you know, it is a thing for concern just because Michigan was rolling. Just, you never want to stop when all you're doing is beating everybody by except Minnesota by 19. Right. So, like, you know, it's extremely frustrating to me because, you know, Michigan's on pause. Are we taking this seriously? No. You can go to Red Robin and go inside a Red Robin and eat a hamburger right now. Don't do that, but like that is going to be much more damaging to the containment of this new variant than anything that was going to happen in a Michigan sporting context where, you know, basketball players aren't even in the same building as these guys.
It's incredibly frustrating because, for example, at Michigan State, I think they had 12 players test positive and the coaching staff testing positive. At Michigan right now, I don't think anyone's tested positive. At least I don't think so. We haven't heard that. What happened is someone on the track team, I think, tested positive with the UK variant. And so
the track team, but yeah.
Yeah,
it was someone else, but let's not
speculate.
So in any event, it's quite frustrating for fans, and I get it, that we're, you know, not only is Michigan not playing, they're not practicing, I don't believe, and I don't think there's any basketball going on. And so that, you have to wonder, it's fair to wonder that, what happens when we come back? I don't know when Michigan's supposed to play. On KenPom, you see the Illinois game still up, but I've heard rumors that game ain't happening either. So
kind of widely reported yesterday that Michigan would maybe need a week to ramp back up, and it's just like it's just security theater, right? Like there's nothing about this shutdown that makes any sense when you look at the broader context of what we're doing in the state.
Yeah, I got a lot of questions about that yesterday. I honestly have not checked on that yet. I will be getting into it today. It just seems odd that they would announce times for games that they already know they aren't going to play. Like,
well, everything is kind of touch and go right now. So
I mean, but again, I'm not saying that that's not true. I'm just saying I don't have any information as of yet, but we'll be getting into it a little bit later on today. Before I ask you my final question, I am curious if you can share succinctly, Craig, what does John think? Your brother John, who's a public health official, what does he think about Michigan's pause?
You know, I saw him Tuesday night and I didn't ask him, so I'm not sure. Okay. I mean, he's been very involved with the various vaccinations and vaccines. of course, but I'm not sure what he thinks about this pause. But I'll tell you what, I'll talk to him in the next day or so and report back, because it is, to the average person, to me, this is kind of mystifying in some sense. As Brian points out, you know, there's lots of things open. There's no evidence that any Michigan basketball player, for example, is tested positive, yet everything is completely closed down. So, and maybe that's completely sensible. I don't know.
It'd be good to get some perspective from him as a public health official and a Michigan guy.
Yeah.
He would come at that from a really good angle. All right. So last one for you guys. So I got a chance to interview Dick Vitale this week over the Michigan Basketball Insider, and it's up now, by the way. And one of the questions that I posed toward the end is like, all right, Dick, you've seen the top teams. Listen to the pundits, and they seem to be, saying that Baylor and Gonzaga are here, and then Michigan and a few other schools are here, a cut below. You know, is there clear separation in your eyes, or is Michigan right there with those teams? So I'm curious what you guys think of that. And with more of an opportunity to pay attention to these other teams, you saw Baylor, what they did to Texas the other night, for instance. Do you think that there's separation? Do you think Baylor and Gonzaga is a cut above, or is Michigan right there with those two?
I think they are a cut above. If you just watch Baylor, they're so athletic. They're so composed on the ball. Like, I think Michigan is going to be in a game with anybody else, but it's pretty easy to see Baylor's athleticism kind of overwhelming Michigan's backcourt a little bit. And then Gonzaga is just a machine offensively, and unlike Iowa, they do play some deep. So, like, I'm not going into either of those games thinking, but I would go into those games thinking, all right, we're not the favorite. But yeah, from what I've seen, a cut above. But
I would agree that they're the team. They are, you know, if you put them on a basketball court with Michigan on a neutral basketball court, I think either one of those. I think you know, maybe like a 5-point spread or something. It wouldn't be incredible. But however, I don't think either one of them have played the schedule in the Big Ten. You know, Gonzaga had a few early teams, but I don't think that the Big 12 is that strong. This, you know, if you're looking at who deserves the top one seed, I think that might be a different conversation than who's the best team.
Yeah, that's an interesting. Yeah, you're probably right.
Did anyone see Iowa Gonzaga game?
I did, and it just kind of felt like Iowa's defense was too porous, and like there was no way that they were going to be able to catch up just because Gonzaga was getting to the bucket over and over and over.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of thinking at this point that Baylor is the best team. I agree with Sam that I think their backcourt, or Brian, whoever said it, might overwhelm Michigan's backcourt a bit. They are so athletic. I'm not so sure about Gonzaga. I mean, they did give up 88 points to Iowa. Michigan did trample them last year in October or November, whenever it was. So I think Michigan Gonzaga feels fairly evenish to me. I don't like the matchup with Baylor if Michigan would end up playing Baylor. Be nice if they – great for the opportunity, but that's how I see it.
Yeah, you know, Dickie V was very much in line with how you guys are thinking. His take was, look, if you were playing a series, I would not pick Michigan in a series. It's just 9 times out of 10, Michigan's going to be on the losing end. But in a one-game scenario – he said, yeah, Michigan can beat those teams.
And if they stay on the one line, they won't have to see them until deep into the tournament. So, I mean,
Wouldn't it, though? What do you make of people? I don't get the national pundits sometimes. You know, we had Clark Kellogg on the podcast. He was, I mean, loving Michigan, guys, loving Michigan. And then I look up last weekend, and he took Michigan off the one line. I'm like, it's the same team, dude. What happened? How did they fall off the one line and they didn't play? There they were off the one.
Well, you know, I don't think Kellogg is like much of a bracket analyst, so I don't put a whole lot of weight into that. But if you look at all the numbers that people tend to look at, Michigan is solidly on the one line, right? I just got to get some.
Yeah, that's the thing. We got to play games and we got to win. You know, and I admit, if we play Illinois next on 2 days of practice or whatever we might have, that makes me nervous. I mean, I think the Michigan State loss to Rutgers it's hard for me to look at that game and not think that Michigan State didn't have some rust. I mean, when you lose by 30 and score 37 points, it isn't all just deficiencies on that team. It was also
rust they shook off. Look, they scored 37 points versus Rutgers, and look at how many points they put up against Iowa. That's great coaching by Tom Izzo.
I'd be very upset with you if Michigan loses to this Michigan State.
Thanks.
Very upset.
Coach of the Year candidate right there. Fellas, it is always a blast with you, my friends. This is more of a blast. Thank you, Michigan State, for the material. Appreciate that. But we'll be back next week, of course, and hopefully we're talking about Michigan being off pause at that point. I have heard nothing to this point to suggest that they won't be. So, fingers crossed. Great show, guys. To the rest of you, thanks for listening. Back tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
Who's got it better than us?